Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Empowering Parents with Knowledge and Content and features Katie Ross in an interview with Alex Ruffner.
All right. Hello, I'm Alex, one of the editorial assistants of Imagine Magazine. Welcome, Katie. Thank you so much for joining me today on this Imagine podcast.
I am so excited to be here.
So the COVID-19 pandemic has raised many concerns for children's mental health and well-being by caregivers, service providers, and professional organizations. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to find out about all of the challenges that you have faced and how you're promoting good social and emotional development in infants and young children, and also what supports you give to their parents, caregivers, and communities. So we've prepared 10 questions for you. Should we get started?
Absolutely. I'm excited.
All right. We'll start it off simple. Where do you work and what is your role?
So I work at a really large children's hospital, specifically working in the neonatal intensive care unit or the NICU with medically fragile babies and their families. And I'm a NICU occupational therapist, so background in development. And then I also started my own company that focuses on educating NICU families and providers, also as a result of this COVID pandemic, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on. But yeah, those are my two loves, my two passion projects.
Awesome. It sounds like it probably keeps you very busy.
Very, very busy. Lots of babies and lots of love for families.
I love it. So what's on your mind when you read about the rise in mental health issues among young children due to the pandemic?
So I think that the children's mental health has been, you know, something that has been coming to the forefront over the last, you know, 10 to 20 years, this understanding about how early childhood and stress and toxic stress can influence development down the road. And I think that the pandemic is giving this face to it all. And really, it's definitely concerning because I don't think that we have the systems and the resources in place to meet the needs of parents who are learning how to navigate these concerns with their children. But also no resources for children. So I think that one of the biggest ways that we're going to have to mediate this really is through education for parents. And then you also have, when you think about young children, I mean, even people like daycare workers who are handling and working with these children who have parents who are working in the pandemic or are living these routines that are just all over the place. And life is just so not what it should be for young babies. So definitely concerning, especially because we don't have the resources in place. And then something I think about too, because I have two pandemic babies, a two-year-old and a two-month-old. So we've really known nothing other than parenting in a pandemic. So for anywhere from thinking about, you know, how do masks influence language development to how's it going to be when his whole first year of life, he never stepped foot in a grocery store, never interacted with anyone outside of, you know, his immediate family, or definitely thinking about how that's going to influence that early brain development and social skills too.
So how has COVID-19 affected the mental health of your clients or patients?
So since I specifically work with babies, they're technically my clients along with their families. Again, I think that it's, again, we've always known that mental health of infants has been this thing that we know. If you work in infant development and work in some of these trauma exposed areas of practice, then you're familiar, but it feels very abstract to think about how we can possibly think about the mental health of infants. But really, we've been, especially if you work in hospital, like hospitalization in and of itself can have a major impact on the mental health outcomes of young children. And when the COVID hit, you know, early on, especially in early 2020, the biggest thing that it impacted was this visitation. So not only were my clients, these babies, separated from their parents at birth from just the natural need of going to the neonatal intensive care unit and not getting things like skin to skin or holding or that traditional home environment. But now you have COVID where hospitals are shutting down visitation. There's new restrictions for when parents can come visit. And I was seeing that related to the hospital that I work in, which I feel like very, very grateful because those visitation restrictions from COVID at least let parents continue to visit at the bedside. You know, it shut it down to just mom and dad. But in communicating with people around the world, learning that parents were completely restricted from visiting their babies in the NICU, not allowed to go in at all to touch or talk or sing to their babies. I have chills right now because it's so bothersome to me still when we think about the mental health of these babies and then of these parents too, because parents really are the buffer. You know, when we think about stress of babies and the mental health of infants, you know, young children can't do anything without their parents. So it's parents who are facilitating that connection and developing that trust that really sets the foundation for mental health and preventing things like depression, anxiety, suicide risk down the road when these kids are teens. We know there's correlations between early hospitalizations and that mistrust that's developed early on with not having positive touch and good cares and feeling like you're being responded to.
Definitely. I mean, like you said, just not, you know, a child being admitted to the NICU, there's already the separation from the parents, but then to add another layer of it that extends that separation is so troublesome and so concerning. So how did you adjust your services to those new needs of your clients and patients?
So again, since, you know, the NICU does separate, you know, the baby from the mom, there's a level of understanding that we already had about the fact that parents were going to have to commute in every day to see their baby. So there was already this pull of, you know, how can I educate families when I don't see them or when I don't know when they're going to visit or be there during the day and matching times and doing things like that. There, that was already present. This just added in another layer of difficulty to that puzzle. Now they, not only are they not able to be around their baby or hold their baby, but they're not going to know their baby at all. And so that's how my little personal passion project / business was born, Blooming Littles, which I just thought of literally in my chair at work where I was like, okay, I'm just going to start blogging about topics that I talk about with parents at the bedside. I think it's been really cool to empower parents to address some of these things that we know influence infant mental health early on in the NICU. So we know that parents who understand how their babies communicate are more attuned to their needs down the road. And that develops that trust, which is developing these really amazing pathways through the brain that sets this foundation for development and prevents some of these negative mental health needs. So giving them this casual outlet for learning has kind of been my contribution. I like to think of helping parents navigate this journey in an impossible scenario, in an impossible situation.
I think that that is so fantastic that you are just fully equipping the parents with all the resources that they need to, one, be able to maximize their time with their baby when they can visit. Since we can't control hospital visitation, we can control how parents are able to spend their time. So you're really giving them all of the tools that they need to be able to maximize that visitation, but also hopefully to like decrease some of the parents' anxiety as well. So that way they kind of know what to expect when they go into the unit. They know what their baby's behaviors are going to look like, what some of the tubes and wires might look like, what some of the positioning aids are for, So they aren't surprised or shocked or worried, you know, that something could be abnormal when this looks like a typical NICU stay.
Absolutely. And that's decreasing the fear surrounding what they're seeing with knowledge is the goal.
Right. So we kind of touched on this a little bit already through decreasing parental fear and stress, but do you have any other ways that you can help infants or children struggling with pandemic-related stress, fear, or grief through the interventions you provide?
So I work with the infant, so my bridge person is the parent, but also the nurse or whomever else is like handling the baby. So I've been wanting to focus a whole lot on touch as, you know, an outlet for helping relieve stress and the fear and all that hormone cortisol release, all that happening within the baby. So I think that touch is like one of the most powerful things that we can give a baby as a way to calm their nervous systems and really promote this beautiful, like parasympathetic relaxation response of their body when they're living in that stressful fight or flight response. We can absolutely change the biological response of their brain and the way that it responds to the world by making sure that we're being conscious and extra attuned with how we are approaching their NICU space, their world.
I feel like that's something that parents can, and any caregiver coming in contact with a child can remember throughout the entire lifespan, is like when you're with that person, be present in that moment and be cognizant mm-hmm. of how your interactions could be affecting the person that you're with.
Absolutely.
So along with, you know, just being present and aware, and then also positive touch, how can parents nurture their infant's mental health?
One, addressing your own fear as a parent, focusing on, okay, I can't control this. I can't control what's happening in the world. I can't control that I had to take my kids to daycare. I had to do that kind of thing. So what can I control? What opportunities and experiences can I offer my child, you know, my 2-year-old now, so that I'm making sure that I'm really facilitating this trusting relationship, consistency, whatever he really needs in that moment. And that's going to look different for every child. And as a parent, I just feel like you really need to be empowered and following your instincts with your kid and focusing on what you can control, because you can spiral real quick thinking about all of these things that we can't control and everything that's different and everything that's taken away from us. And then also when we think about nurturing, you know, our baby's mental health, it's developing trust with the baby. We're changing brain development by making sure that we're building this trusting and responsive caregiving. So I think that, especially for my families, empowering them to respond to their babies, empowering parents that if their child wakes up, in between, you know, when they're supposed to, in between touch times, as we call them, they can absolutely go in there and calm their baby. You know, they can respond to that baby's cry or that baby's discomfort. And that's really where it starts, is building this trusting relationship, because then that baby is like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. I'm awake. I can't go back to sleep. I'm so unsettled. No one's here. And then mom comes in or dad comes in and puts their hands on them or says their name or starts singing something softly that they recognize and know, and they calm their baby. And that baby is like, oh my gosh, I cried and someone came to me. And they develop that beautiful foundation for overcoming difficulty, because everyone is going to experience a level of mental health struggle, difficulty. You know, there is going to be stress in life. The difference is, do we have somebody in our life who helps us cope with that in the moment, or do we not?
How can we best support communities to build sustainable mental health and well-being for infants and young children and their families?
Well, again, yeah. So for, I mean, personally, me doing my part has been through this social media outlet of just like raising awareness that this is even a thing. We can't really build resources for something that people don't believe exists. And I think that what you guys are doing is awesome by focusing on like this as being like this big topic of understanding and looking at like, okay, this is the music therapy world. This is where our strengths lie. This is what we can do to look at mental health from our lens.
So what specific resources do you recommend? This could be for parents or, you know, for people working with infants in the NICU.
So honestly, I think, again, I've said throughout this whole thing is like one of the best ways that we can support infant mental health is by supporting the parents. I mean, it's just the truth. we know that based on research, and I know it just based on my heart as a parent. So one thing that I really want to encourage, especially, you know, if there's NICU parents out there or anyone who's listening or knows a NICU parent, is really encouraging them to get involved in some kind of peer support or parent support group. You know, Hand to Hold is one organization. You have Carter's Cause, which is another one. The Penelope Project runs support groups. There's a ton of them. Dear NICU Mama is an amazing organization that supports NICU families, NICU moms specifically.
So what are some of your hopes for these pandemials? Maybe some specific ones for your two little pandemials.
I know. I was like, are pandemials the pandemic babies?
Yes.
So it's the cutest name, although I wish it wasn't the case. And my hope when I think about pandemials is they're going to build this resilience naturally. But I also, I hope that they know a world without this. That is like my heart in hoping for them, is that they can experience a world without all of this pressure, without all of this underlying fear to participate in things that are exciting and meaningful.
Can you maybe share some advice for our listeners that are also facing this mental health crisis?
If these 2 years have been a struggle, like you are so not alone in that. I think if you can also find your passion a little bit too, finding and your purpose and finding something that fills your cup essentially can be really, really helpful for overcoming that pit that you can be in. So whatever it may be, you know, there's never a time as now to like focus on what makes you feel alive and what gets you in a flow in life and make some change.
Yeah. Take that leap and yeah, really just try something new that maybe that you've been wanting to like take control over that aspect of your life and make a decision to do something for you.
Yeah. Now's the time. I feel like the pressure is off as far as like what we put on ourselves. Like I kind of like, it's this free for all in life right now. Like no one cares about like what anything you do, you like, you go do your thing. Like you try something new. No one cares about the failure part anymore. We have all these incredibly hard things going on in life that you should just, you're able to do what you want to do more freely.
I love that. Well, Katie, thank you so much for sharing all of your insights. As always, it's a joy talking to you.
Yes, me too.
And hopefully we'll be in touch and maybe you can contribute something else to Imagine in the future.
You guys are amazing. I'm so happy to be here. And thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I always love checking out Blooming Little. So I will stay in touch with you.
You're
on
so
Instagram
sweet.
As well.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2022.